going throughout spring, I had a great showcase at defensive end, and I knew in my heart, I knew in my soul that that's where I wanted to be. And throughout the whole spring, I had my dad there with me, talking through with me, you know, my progression, how well I've been doing, and you know, he's been getting excited for me too. And so we fast forward to fall camp. Like I said, I come out of practice, I check my phone, I have like 30 missed calls all from family members, and call them back. First thing I see is my dad lifeless on the ground. And for me, like I didn't even process that my dad had passed. I was in such a state of shock that I couldn't even believe it. Like, it was weird. Like, even though he was gone, a part of me just felt like he was still a call away, because that's how we always communicated. It was through a phone call, FaceTime. And so, like, in my head, I was just processing, like, I'm no longer going to have those calls. And I just couldn't believe it. I remember being frustrated. I remember having my time to cry, but I felt like I didn't even have a chance to grieve.
Welcome to Good and Decent, a podcast by Grotto Network. Season 2, Episode 7, Reaching Out.
Hello, and welcome to Good and Decent. I hope you're enjoying our monthly release pattern we got going on right now. This month's episode is about what is a person's deep why within them. I'm Josh Long, senior producer. I'm sitting in Grotto Teaching Studio with Kevin DeClute, our producer. Kevin, that voice we heard at the top of the podcast was Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa. He's a Notre Dame football player. He's an amazing football player. You got to follow him around for a couple of days, like in a really crucial point in his life, right?
Yeah. So Myron he was captain of the football team here. He just finished up his last season, and he was waiting to find out if he's going to end up in the NFL. So there was this time period where he was in South Bend for two or three more days. We were able to catch up with him, and I just kind of wanted to find out, like, what was he doing to prepare for this next stage in his life?
It's interesting. That space in life between college and, I guess, adulthood is something we really like exploring at Grotto. And for Myron, it's like, instead of taking the LSATs or turning in a resume to a bunch of different companies, he's doing this draft prep. Yeah. So what are some of the things he was doing to prep?
Yeah, so draft prep, I mean, what that involves is there's basically a couple things that these college players have to go through to be seen by these NFL teams and kind of so they could be evaluated. And there's the combine, there's pro day, and these guys do different things, like they run the 40-yard dash, they see how high they can jump, they do different, it's different for each position, I believe, but the scouts are there watching them and evaluating them. So after the season, you enter this draft prep where you're, you know, getting ready for those events.
And I know this was an especially hard time, because for any young adult, it's just a fraught time with a lot of uncertainty. But kind of as he was saying there at the top of the pod, he had lost his father right before this last season.
Yeah, and he opened up to me pretty quick about that, because he, like you said, what's your why? I think with Myron, as he navigated last season from losing his dad right at the top of the season, right as it was about to start, he struggled with his mental health, and he really got a fire inside of him to help other people. And that's really what he wanted to tell me about as soon as I sat down and started talking with him. Sure, we were talking about the NFL, we were talking about the draft, but what was really on his mind was what he went through losing his father, and then how that changed him and how he wanted to help other people, you know, moving forward.
We were lucky enough, just before we started recording, to have resident Notre Dame football expert Johnny McDermott come into the studio here. If you come to a Notre Dame football game, he runs like the stats on the board. He's a huge fan. If he ever did take a day off of work, it'd probably be to go see a Notre Dame football game or to like travel to a bowl game, which I know he's done too. But anyway, we're picking his brain a little bit about Myron, having seen him over the years. And one of the things he mentioned was his 4.81 40 time, which for a defensive lineman, I guess is really impressive. And I thought that was really cool because the first interview that you caught with him that we're going to play here in a second is with his strength and conditioning coach, Matt Bayless.
Yeah, so Matt Bayless is the strength and conditioning coach. And from what I gathered, all the players really attached to this guy. Like, he really creates a culture within the football team.
A keeper of culture, Johnny said.
Yes, he did say a keeper of culture.
And how many bays does he have?
You know, he's actually Bayless. He doesn't have any. I guess these players spend more time with the strength coach than with any other coach, any other part of the team, really. The strength
coach. Particularly with Notre Dame, they just flipped the head coach. So it previously was head coach Brian Kelly, and now it's head coach Marcus Freeman. But the one constant through that was kind of Matt Bayless, who's arguably almost like a father figure to these guys.
Right. And Coach Bayless was the first coach to say that even though there's a coaching transition happening, I'm staying. He was the first one to announce that he was going to stay with the new coach coming in. And I think that was a big relief for all the players here that we're going to continue to play.
I think having listened to this interview myself, it's pretty clear what the relationship is like between these two men. So without further ado, we're going to let you all be kind of a fly on the wall with this really personal conversation between Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa and strength and conditioning coach Matt Bayless.
So basically, thank Coach Bayless for doing this. The whole point of this was kind of to showcase like my journey from the beginning of the year up until now, leading into draft. And a huge part of my journey, especially here in Notre Dame, you've been a huge influence in that sector. And what a lot of people don't know for like college athletes is the strength and conditioning coach for us plays a huge part. And you understand that. And a lot of us, a lot of the guys on the team understand that because like half the time we're with you more than our coaches. Being here and having the opportunity to come here and train under you has been such a huge blessing. And I definitely wanted to get that and tell you that, you know, in person, and thank you for all that. But I just wanted to get, you know, your thoughts, you know, why it's important for a coach to, you know, address, you know, these issues that they may see in players. If they see a player is struggling with some off-field issues, how can a coach, you know, be there, be instrumental in helping them, you know, grow as a player, but also as a person off the field? And again, like I said, strength coaches, especially you, maybe it's just you, because you've had a huge impact, not only in my life, but every single player that comes through this program can attest to, you know, the impact that you've had in our lives, on the field and off the field.
Well, first off, you know, it's an honor to be able to sit down with you and share like this and be able to, you know, to help people. And, you know, for you, when you and I first met, I mean, there was an instant connection. You know, I think our hearts connected, and, you know, obviously we went to the same church early on, and I'll never forget the story I tell people was we were playing a game in California, Saturday night game, and the next day, Sunday, was church, and I went to the 11 a.m. service, I think, and the pastor said that, you know, for all you people that, you know, don't have time to go to church and, you know, you're too tired or something came up, he said, I was watching a young man playing a game in California last night, and he was in the front row for the 8 a.m. service. And I'll never forget that story. I think you were only a freshman when that happened. And so that kind of opened up a relationship between you and I. My family got to meet you, and, you know, it just became, you know, a part of our life. And so, you know, as a strength conditioning coach, I firmly believe that it's the truest form of coaching, because you're not doing your ultimate passion, your ultimate love. It's part of the process. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have a really neat opportunity to be able to help guys overcome challenging situations through training. But the training aspect of it has never been the real motivation for what we do, for what I do. It's always been how we can make a difference, how I can make a difference in young people's lives. What's the ultimate purpose? What's the purpose that the Lord has given me? And throughout my career, and here it just went, you know, to a whole nother level, you know, because it's Notre Dame and the type of guys that come to Notre Dame.
Yes, sir.
You know, just we all seem to kind of have the same, you know, inner spirit. I don't know what you call it, but that there's this, we all have the same fire.
Yeah.
That we want to be the best. We're servant people. We want to be good people, you know. And so, at a place like this, it makes it very easy and comfortable just to be myself. And you know, when I saw and heard about what had happened to you, right away my heart was broken for you, because I knew how close you were to your pops, and you know, I knew what a figure he was in your life. You know, in terms of not only your dad, but as a pastor, and just how special he was and how much you loved him and respected him. I knew this. And then I also, you know, from life experience, went through losing a parent in college. I lost my mom in college around the same age as you. And I remember how devastating that was. It's very hard to deal with. And you need help, and you need to know that people are there to support you. And so I think, you know, just the fact that our relationship was so strong, you know, and having gone through that, you know, just made it something that you know, came naturally. You know, it was just, you know, how are you doing, Myron? You know, words, you know, don't forget, this isn't the end. This is just, you know, this is something that's, you know, horrible in a sense, it happens, but it's part of God's plan, and we all get better from it. And your dad, you know, is watching over you, and you're going to grow from this. And so, you know, and that wasn't just lip service. That someone had been through it. And then, of course, throughout life, you know, I talk about this all the time with the players, like you said, is there's, you know, the hard stuff is going to come in life, and we all go through the hard stuff and adversity and challenges, but it's how you deal with it. And I feel like as men, sometimes we don't deal with it the best way we can in terms of talking about it. And I think, you know, especially, you know, football players and tough guys. And I mean, I'll be the first person to say, you know, I've been a mental toughness, physical toughness, you know, as strong as you could possibly be physically and mentally, but that doesn't mean you don't have feelings, you don't have emotions, and you don't have, you have to talk and open up. And, you know, as you talked about, you need your brothers, you need family, you need people to intervene when you're going through those hard times. And, you know, I shared this with you yesterday. There was a couple years ago, I was going through a very, very hard time, very. And it was, you know, a time where I needed much intervention from family and friends, and even players were reaching out to me, you know. And so there's no reason why us as men shouldn't be able to talk about this and help one another. And, you know, I got this from Jay Glazer's book, and be teammates for one another. Because we're all going through hard stuff.
Yeah.
And when you're going through it, it's for you, it could be the hardest thing that you can possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think, you know, this is awesome what you're doing. But then also to be able to help all those young people out there that are struggling and going through grief. And I think a lot of strength coaches, most I think, have the same heart. You know, because we're not position coaches. You know, we're not, you know, our focus is more on effort and attitude and you know, and life situations and life challenges. And I think that's where, you know, they kind of go hand in hand. But yeah, it's been an absolute, you know, unbelievable honor to be able to sit down with you like this and talk. And
yes, sir. Likewise.
There's a lot of people hurting and suffering, mm-hmm. and knowing that others are going through it.
Yeah.
You say to yourself, well, okay, I'm not the only person. Okay, you know, I'm not, you know, nuts. I'm not losing my mind here. Yeah. Like, this is you know, hard, and I got to deal with it. But I have people there with me that are going through it and love me and want to see me finish for them and for myself, and that's going to motivate others to see me get better. And remembering your ultimate purpose.
If anybody knows Coach Bayless, working with Coach Bayless, it's it's one of the best, yeah, one of the worst experiences of your life. Like, this is one of the best people, this people person you'll ever meet. This guy, the way he invests into each and every player, the way he approaches his day, there's just a passion in him that's very contagious, and that's why us as players just love being around you. And then you flip the script into the workouts, and then that now it's like, dang, Coach Bayless, killing us out here. But as a player, like, I really enjoyed that experience of, you know, not even being punished, how do you say this, being killed through a workout, and also having that off-the-player relationship with you. Because during a workout, Coach Bayless is a totally different person. He's on go mode. He's on fire. He's snapping everyone, making sure everyone is doing everything correctly. Working with Coach Bayless, it's always been about the details, and he always talks about how important it is to focus on the little details. And it's those things that kind of, you know, create these habits that kind of make us or break us as great players, right? And I think from the mental standpoint, strength coaches play a huge role in building our mental toughness, because when we go through these workouts, it's supposed to be physically exhausting. And that's when it turns into a mental game of whether or not you want to push yourself through this or you're going to quit. And I feel like as a coach, like, why do you think that approach into, like, I guess training us as young kids coming in from high school is the best way to go? Because I definitely think it's one of the best ways to go. You know what I'm saying? Like, you come in as a young kid, you don't know what to expect, and then you just basically get thrown to the pit. You get thrown to the fire as a young kid because you need to learn quick. And I feel like that's the best way for high school kids who are coming up as athletes into these universities to learn, is they gotta kind of go through that hard point. They gotta kind of experience just some sort of a struggle, because I feel like in the end, when you kind of realize the person that you've become after experiencing, like, such adversity, you become kind of proud of who you are, right? And you kind of, like, want to go even more. And I feel like that's the mental aspect that you guys have built in me here. And so, like, as a coach, for, like, what do you think? Why do you think that approach, in far as training, works so much?
Yeah, it's well, first, you know, everything that we do physically, you know, in our workouts, is, and you nailed it. It's to kind of go through very hard, you know, situations, very hard conditions, challenging, you know, both physically and mentally, so that we can overcome, you know, learn how to overcome when put in practice situations, game situations, and most importantly, life situations, mm-hmm. right? And I've always believed, you know, that you connect. It all connects. Your faith, you know, who you are as a man, you know, or a woman, who you want to be as a competitor. A champion is an all-the-time thing. You know, you talked about the details, and the details are so important, because when you are going that hard and you are going through tough times, you don't want to be sloppy and out of control. You want to be detailed and focused, so that, because it is hard, and the situations can be very challenging. And so you want to be able to be, I call it controlled aggression, where you want to be, yes, intense and focused, mm-hmm. but you also want to be under control, so that you're in control of the situation. The situation isn't in control of you. And so part of that is to teach, is I've always wanted to teach guys how to flick that switch. Because it's all about, you know, it's about love. It's coming from a place of love, because I when I was growing up, as a young person, I always wanted to be a champion. I wanted to be the best of the best, but I didn't know how to do it. You know, it didn't have the mentorship needed. And so I was kind of blindly going through it. And then I started meeting some unbelievable mentors, and I started training myself. And I got into training, and training kind of led me to my path. I mean, if you would have said, you know, 30 years ago, you're going to be the head strength coach at Notre Dame and talking to, you know, one of the greatest players to ever play there that's about to go to the NFL about life and training, I'd have said, there's no way. Are you kidding me? If that happens, oh, my God, it's the greatest thing ever. So it just kind of, it's been a path. The Lord has put situations in my life, and I firmly believe that he's in charge. And every situation that I've been able to be in has been through, you know, his path.
Yes, sir.
And I started training high school kids. I mean, I started training, you know, once I finished, you know, training myself and all of my buddies, we all kind of trained together, powerlifting, you know, off-season bodybuilding, high-intensity training, drop sets, you know, the stuff, when you go for high rep, like the really hard stuff. I always believed that if you could overcome that stuff in the weight room, you could overcome stuff in life, right? Mm-hmm. It was just part of the process. And as I started doing it with football players in high school, and I saw how they responded, and it created this brotherhood. It created this instant bond with, you know, the team. And like you had described, it's very hard, and you kind of almost hate it when you're going through it. But then you know at the end, it's like this feeling of, oh, my gosh, I can do anything.
Yep.
And we did it together. And so that's kind of where it started. And you know, now, like I said, here at Notre Dame, it's become so valuable to our program. And the reason is what it is because of you guys. The day you guys come in here and say, you know what, Coach Bayless, I ain't buying the Kool-Aid anymore. You're nuts. Like, I'm listening to that because I'm not doing this for me. This is not, you know, so that I feel good. What I think the greatest strength coaches have, or greatest coaches, greatest people, is they want to see the people that they get a chance to work with be the best that they can be. So where this is coming out of, it's an honoring of the people that I get to work with and provide these situations that are challenging, but yet overcoming, you know, the strength to that you thought you didn't have. Like, there's a quote I love: strength is doing things that we didn't think we could do really well. Overcoming things that I didn't think I could do that. Not only can you do it, but you do it really, really well.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the physical and mental, you know, toughness of the workouts. And what's happening in those workouts physiologically is we're getting in better and better shape because we're going to a point where we kind of go to our breaking point, but not all the way. Sometimes, then we stop, we take a break, we rest, we recover, and then we get a little bit better, and we get a little bit better, and we get a little bit better.
Yeah.
And the guys like you who embrace and attack it, you get in this unbelievable physical and mental shape like you're describing.
Mm-hmm.
And I just believe it's the only way to train if you're going to train. And that, now, you're at the highest level, right? I mean, you've played 5 years at Notre Dame. You're going to be an NFL player. Obviously, there's different layers to this. When guys first come to school, we start them out and we progress them. It's still hard. So, but it's a progression, and I think that's very important also to realize and to know. But you know, it's always been from a place of love. It's been from a place of, you know, kind of having gone through it and done it. When I was a younger strength coach, I used to take pride, and every once in a while I'd jump in with the guys, and because I wanted you guys to know I was in it with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always very, very important to me because I never wanted it to be like, well, he's giving us something that he would never do. You know, I never wanted that. So that was very important that I was able to do that. So the stuff we do is also things that, that you know, I had done you know, years ago, not now, obviously too old, but always from a place of love, always from a place of wanting the absolute best for the guys.
So. Awesome. Like I said, both of us came in here man of faith, and my faith and my journey has played an instrumental role from the very day I stepped foot on campus. I remember when I took my visit here, this is the only place that like gave me a list of churches around the area. And I was like, I want to come here. Like, yeah. The fact that they understood how much my faith meant to me, that's what made Notre Dame for me. And going throughout this entire season, my faith was something that it was tested, man. It was tested constantly. There's times where, like, I would wake up sometimes and just have this feeling of calling my dad, right? And then, like, it would just hit me, like, dang, he's no longer here. Like, it was just the weirdest feeling. Like, for some reason, I'll wake up and in my head, like, I just have this feeling that I'll call your dad. And I would always come back to the same thought, like, it's just so weird that, like, he's gone. And, like, I'm having these thoughts of, like, calling him and stuff like that. And a lot of it was, like I said, like, I've entered this, mentally I wasn't in a good place where, like I said, I isolated myself, and I believe if it wasn't for my faith, it could have took a very bad turn, you know? I could have created some terrible habits, and who knows where I would have been right now if it weren't for, you know, my faith and, you know, the people that I've surrounded myself with who are also just people of faith. Like you said, you've mentioned and you've talked a lot about how much your faith has been so strong for you and throughout all your endeavors. In terms of, like, I don't want to, like, throw a bomb on you. In terms of, like, mental health, how has your faith, you know, kind of helped you, you know, work through all your mental health issues? Because I know for me, like, dude, there be constant times, like I said, where I've fallen short spiritually. You know, I've fallen short in terms of sin, and I would isolate myself even more. I'd kind of become, like, ashamed of, like, the person that you've become as you've, like, entered that mental state, right? And then you start digging yourself a hole, and, like, there's always gonna be people reaching out trying to help you get back out of your hole, help you get back at the hole. But mentally, I feel like when you go through it, like, there's also, like, another layer of, like, stress or, like, anxiety that gets placed on you because of, like, you kind of push yourself further and further away from people. And like I said, just going back to, like, my faith, my mom reaching out to me every day, and, you know, thank God for my mom, the God-fearing woman that she is, you know? Mama's just, their love is unmatched, you know? And if it weren't for my mom just constantly calling me, reaching out to me, and mind you, not, like, my mom also lost the love of her life, you know? She lost the love of her life. She's reaching out to me, making sure I'm okay, and, you know, I'm in this state of isolation. And even though I was, like, mentally I'm not in a good place, I'm still, like, an observative dude. I see, you know, I can see my mom is also struggling. I can see that, and it all pours on me. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, like, why am I, like, putting so much more stress and anxiety on my mom? And now even more, I become, like, engulfed in, like, this hole, right? How has your faith, you know, helped you on your journey and your walk, you know, through, like, just, you know, mental health issues?
Yeah, that's an incredible testimony, and so true. And during the hardest times that I've been through, I had no choice to go to my faith. Now, there were times when my faith was weak, mm-hmm. weak, and I didn't have that, and I did make mistakes. And I think that, you know, that also needs to be said and talked about. You know, because I've said this many times to many people, if it wasn't for the Lord, I'm not even here. I'm not sitting here. I don't know where I am. No clue. No idea.
100%.
Because, I mean, the amount of times that I've been on my knees to figure things out and get pointed in the right direction, or praying for something to end that I'm going through, and I have to be patient and wait. And so how do you do that? You know, again, you know, my mentor, you know, happens to be my best friend, unbelievable. His faith never veered. He's about, you know, he's 12 years older than me. I worked for him. He was one of the first coaches I worked for. His faith was that way, and I was able to go to him. Mm-hmm. And during my mid-20s, high 20s, when I was struggling through some things, he was amazing and kind of solidified. My faith got stronger, you know, as I kind of got older and started going through more things, yeah. Wanted to start a family. It just became very apparent to me. I just felt the Holy Spirit telling me, this is, if you don't do this, it's not going to happen the way you want it. And yeah. So I'll tell my sons, I prayed for you guys. You know, I prayed for my wife before I even met her.
Yeah.
You know, just from going through Bible and scripture and what it's supposed to be and what it's supposed to look like. Doesn't mean, you know, I don't make mistakes like you said. There's been, you know, I'm the most opposite of perfect person on the planet. We sin every day. And, mm-hmm. and, that's the great thing about, you know, being saved and having a relationship with the Lord is that you're able to, you know, and you don't take advantage of it, but you know you're forgiven, you know, and none of us are perfect. We try to be, but none of us are. Only one person was, and he died on a cross. I have to say this, too, that when you're going through these mental health battles, you need help, and don't ever be afraid to get help. I know sometimes people don't want to get help. They don't, whether it's therapy or medicine or that. There is, everybody's situation is different. Everybody's going through something different. And so your situation might call for that. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That's okay because it's part of life. It's part of what happens. Mm-hmm. And my faith, even though it was so hard for me to go in that direction to get help and do that, is what allowed me to do that. It's basically, I was facing an unknown, an invisible enemy. Mm-hmm. I'm swinging, okay, if you could picture this, I'm swinging and I'm not hitting anything. I can't hit, physically I cannot do this. This is what this mental health, when you hit these high levels of anxiety, what happens?
Yeah.
And you can't, there's no winning. So the only shot that I had was my faith. That was the mm-hmm. only thing that I had, and that I could pray. And like I said, on my hands and knees and praying just to be a husband and a father. That was it.
That's
if
awesome.
I could coach, if I could, you know, do what I, you know, what I love to do, train, all that. That wasn't even mm-hmm. in the thought process. Yeah. It was only to be there for my kids and my wife. That's it. That was what I was praying for. And then with, you know, getting help and having the faith to be able to get that help and talking to people that said, yeah, it's okay. You know, mm-hmm. you know, that's, you need to do that. Cause I was, like I said earlier, I was the guy that I'm mentally, physically tough. I can do anything. There's nothing that'll yeah. stop me. We're only flesh and blood. You know, we're all just flesh and blood, and everybody, is going to go through hard times. And so my faith is what got me through those times. And I could tell you now, looking back at it, and my mentor told me this, he said, you're going to look back and see why you're going through this. Because when I was going through it, I asked him, I said, how could this be happening to me? And he said, I don't know. He goes, but God's always taking care of you. Because mm-hmm. of all the other stuff I've gone through. And he said, when it's all said and done, you're going to look back on it, and you'll know why. And, you know, being able to sit here with you right now, it's kind of one of those moments.
Sir.
You know, to be able to share with others.
Definitely.
You got to tell people, you got to get help, and you can't
yep.
feel bad about it because
yep.
everybody goes through. Like, yep. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're not going through some kind of mental health challenge at some part of your life, I think that's rare. Mm. It's the opposite.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Everybody's struggling at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much,
yes, sir.
Coach. Appreciate it.
Love you, man.
Thank you.
Love you.
Love you, too.
Welcome back to the studio. Josh Long here with producer Kevin DeClute. Kevin, that interview you captured was great, but your story didn't really stop there. You followed him through like the locker rooms, the Goog is what they call like this huge athletic complex that's here on campus. But what was really cool to me is that you also went even further behind the scenes to his house. What was it just like, you know, walking around with Myron, and how like gigantic is he? Because he's a football player that is like right there on the front lines, big guy, but it's, I've only seen him in video. So what's he like in person?
So I'm not exactly a big guy. I'm like, you know, 170 on a heavy day. And he's probably at least, he's close to twice my weight maybe. But when I was shooting him doing the drills and things like that on the field, I had to make sure I got out of the way. Just walking through the locker room and stuff, it's like everybody loves this guy. And you can clearly tell everybody really likes Myron.
Which is tough because, like, I feel like a lot of times if someone comes back to campus after they've graduated, it might not be taken in the best way, but you didn't feel any of that with Myron.
No. Every room he walked in, people were giving him hugs and high fives, asking him how his draft prep was going, wishing him good luck and, you know, moving forward. So
maybe that's just how people responded to me when I came back.
Yeah, okay.
I won't project anymore.
You should probably stop going back to high school at this point. I also got a chance to meet Myron's roommate, Mike Vincent. And Mike is a football player as well. It was fun just to see the two of them hang out. We got to the house and, you know, they're making some dinner and then sat down at the table, dining room table, and they started playing cards, started playing gin rummy. And
classic cards for the kids these days.
Right. And you could tell that they had played this game a lot because they were like, That's fun. Right back into it like they do all the time.
And so, Michael Vinson, you said he's a player on the football team as well. Mm-hmm. He's a long snapper. He goes by the nickname Milk, which has a long and convoluted story behind it that we just heard. It's actually a Yahoo Sports answer if you really want to know why Michael Vinson is called Milk. But again, Kevin, you did a really good job of just being like a fly on the wall. And this is a really open, legitimate conversation between two guy friends, and it's kind of refreshing to hear.
Thanks for doing this, bro. You're one of my roommates from last year who kind of went on this journey that I went on mentally when everything started happening. Obviously, the first phone call to fall camp, I found out my dad passed, and essentially, this story, this film is just to help just, you know, grieving families and those who've been facing, like, mental health issues to kind of overcome it. And it ain't easy, you know. But through my journey, what's helped me a lot was, you know, having great friends and teammates like you that who are just around you in love, continue to encourage you, and just always, you know, pull me back whenever, you know, that they feel like I've gone too far off, you know. Yeah. And like I said, you were my roommate, so you kind of, you know, witnessed a little bit of, you know, my experience. And just this conversation is just being raw and authentic and open just to help, you know, anyone going through what I went through kind of snap out of it and help them understand that they have help, you know.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when you first got that call, you know, during fall camp, you know, our kind of, you know, me, Kurt, and Drew, our initial reaction was to run towards you. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like we know you better than anyone on the team.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't easy for us to see you heartbroken and stuff. You know, it was very difficult for us to see a brother that we love as much as you to go through that kind of stuff. So what immediately jumped into our heads was, what can we do to help?
Yeah.
You know, and just being there by your side, you know, going back to the dorm with you to get your stuff, mm-hmm. You know, making sure that you're okay, you get to, then you got to the airport okay, and checking in on you. You know, it was really hard for us when you were away, because we didn't really know how you were feeling,
yeah.
all that stuff, but we knew that you'd be okay, because, you know, your family is so strong, mm-hmm. you know, and you're one of the strongest guys that I know, physically and mentally, you know.
Appreciate it. I feel like a lot of people that kind of go through like tough mental health challenges, they need to know that there's someone in their corner pulling for them. And for me, like I was telling Coach Bayless, and I was a lot of people that I share my story with, I was telling them, because of my, you know, atmosphere of contact, my friends, my teammates, the people that I surrounded myself with, and my faith, that's how I was able to get out of the funk. You know, is you just got people who just constantly just shower their support on you. And that's what it was here. Like I said, the day I lost my dad, that's what it was. You, Drew, and Kurt immediately already on it, texting me, what do I need? What can you guys do to help? And it didn't dawn on me back then, but like going throughout this journey and this process, like I look back and think like, man, I really am blessed to have had, you know, teammates and, you know, roommates like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, crazy thing is like we all go through stuff.
Yeah.
But collectively, for us as a group, the way we support each other, I feel like is like instrumental into helping each and every one of us overcome like our own personal struggles. Because last year I was barely here, and you know that I was barely in the house. And for me, like, I didn't tell anyone this, but the reason why was because like I isolated myself bad. Like I couldn't talk to anyone. I didn't want to talk to anybody, because just the thought of, you know, having my, just the thought of my dad, it would break me. And you noticed the Toledo game, playing through my dad's funeral, that was another layer of just anxiety and just stress, but also like a feeling of kind of like shame, you know? A part of me was like kind of ashamed that I missed my dad's funeral, but I'm also in my head, but I'm like, nah, like I have a team over here that selected me as team captain, that I have brothers that are relying on me over here, and they're here now. You know, I can't change. And that's the battle that was going through my head was, right. Did I make the right decision? And that kind of took a toll on me throughout the season, was like, did I make the right decision of playing the game versus taking the chance to just go home for my dad's funeral and miss a Toledo game? And like I said, I look back with no regrets. I mean, all of that has, I feel like, kind of pushed me to the person I am today from that mental state, through the support system that I had, and time, you know, like, because you need time. Like, you need time to process things, especially when you lose a family. Like, you just need time. Sometimes you just need that time alone. But from a mental health standpoint, that's when that time alone can become an unhealthy habit of isolation. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was for me. And you witnessed that firsthand, because I wouldn't be here all the time. I just couldn't be at home. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be surrounded by anyone. I just had to lock myself up. Deep down inside, dude, it hurt me. There was times where, like, I felt so bad for, like, how I handled things in terms of, like, our relationship, you know, with you, with Drew, with Kurt. You know, I barely gave you guys the time. I didn't really realize that until, like, I looked back, you know, after being, you know, helped by just so many people through, you know, their love and support. Mm-hmm. After I got out that mental funk, I looked back and I'm like, dang, like, I could have done that better as a teammate. You know, I could have done that better. And that was just, like, another layer of, like, just mentally, like, that stress and anxiety that mm-hmm. comes, like, on you as, like, you face these battles. Like I said, you got to see that firsthand. And so, like, just from your perspective, you've seen, you obviously, like, seeing what I went through, you knew how to help. And that was my thing, was I had teammates and friends who just knew how to help, you know, people who they see going through a funk. And for you, like, you know, not only as, like, a teammate of mine, but as a man, like, for us, like, as men, it's hard to talk about this, because, like, a part of us is, like, it's not so much a pride of, you know, being, like, how do you say it? Like, that alpha dog, like, that mentality of, like, you don't want to be soft. It's not even about that. I feel like for us as men, or maybe just for me, it's just, like, there's just so much to it that you can't even explain. Like, you don't even want to put it into words, because, like, mentally, it's exhausting. Like, it, you don't even want to think about it. And that's what, like, mental health is, man. It's like, I was, it's funny because I was talking to Coach Bayless and he described it perfectly. Like, it's an invisible monster that you can't touch. When you swing, you can't even hurt it, but you feel every single ounce of its pain, you know, when it affects you.
Yeah,
and yeah, just for you as a teammate, just from your perspective, like, you know, how for you as a teammate, do you notice that? And, you know, and any of your friends, you know, family members, and, you know, how do you, like, approach in helping, you know, other people? And why is it important to kind of call out the red flags that kind of point towards someone struggling with mental health?
Yeah. So, like how you're talking about, you know, you being isolated and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I knew, like, we all knew that something was going on. But the beauty of with our relationship is it's so strong that we don't have to be with each other,
mm-hmm.
be with each other, if that makes any sense.
Definitely.
Like, we were always there with you to, like, provide support. You could always, you know, come back and just hang out, you know, play some cards, all that stuff. So it's definitely important to have those deep relationships because you don't have to be necessarily with the person to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see it in someone, you know, it's definitely very important, especially being, you know, a student athlete playing at the highest level, you can definitely tell when something's off, especially for my position, like as a long snapper, everything is all mm-hmm. mental. It's kind of like a game of golf.
Yep.
It's an individual sport. You know, we have the same mechanics every time. So if something's going on or you're not thinking mentally right, you can kind of see that in some people, you know, like if a kicker starts missing kicks or if a golfer starts, you know, shanking drives, not playing well, but also you can just kind of tell someone's everyday demeanor.
Definitely.
You know, if someone's really happy, you know, go lucky guy, like you, like every mm-hmm. time that you would come in the locker room, you'd be smiling, cracking jokes, playing music on the aux, singing. Guys sang a lot. But you know, after that happened with your dad passing, you know, it was definitely difficult for us to kind of stand by and see, you know, not smiling, not singing, all that,
mm-hmm.
all that kind of stuff. So definitely reaching out to people, you know, when you start to see different mood changes or someone's not acting like they usually do for a couple of days, you know, people cannot get a good night of sleep, whether they failed an exam or whatever, but for it to go longer than 2-3 days, you know, it's definitely important to check in on people.
Definitely,
because you can read people, especially if you've been with them for a while, like on a football team, you're with your brothers a whole lot,
each
other, you know, 24/7, 365, so you can tell if something's not right, and then definitely acting on that is very important.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and I think one of the things I wanted to ask you about too is like, I mean, we all have our own mental battles, obviously, but I think a story and testament to you was you earning your scholarship. And one, I just want to say I'm proud of you, bro, and you deserve it, man. One of the most hardworking guys I ever met in my life, and your care factor and how genuine you are is truly unmatchable. And another thing is, coming in as a walk-on, earning your way to a scholarship, there's definitely, you know, maybe there's not, but I feel like there's definitely has been some up and downs there, you know, for you mentally, you know, as a, you're like, it's going to be, what, your second year, third year starting, as our third year starting as a long snapper, and it's going to be your first year being on scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, mentally, I feel like it would take a toll on me in terms of kind of, you know, you sometimes you just want to question your position. Like, you know, I'm a 3-time starting long snapper who, you know, pays the price every day, you know, doesn't complain, and here you are still not being awarded a scholarship. And there's no complaints, and this is a question. I'm not trying to, you know, like, pins anyone back into it, but I just want to tap into like the mental aspect of it, like for you as a player, as a student athlete, not at any other, this is Notre Dame now, like how mentally did you take that on? How did you, you know, go through that, you know, phase as a walk-on, understanding that, hey, like my path here isn't the easiest. Some guys, they have everything paid for and I have to earn my way on here. So for you mentally, like, what was, you know, your mental state during that time, and like what helped you? What guided you throughout those low points, that kind of helped you understand, like, nah, this is where I'm meant to be. This is what I'm meant to be right here. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. my freshman year, I struggled a lot with trying to balance, you know, Notre Dame academics with Notre Dame football, all eyes on you. My first game was, you know, Michigan College Game Day at night.
Yeah.
It was, and then I didn't play, so I was just kind of soaking it all in, taking it all in, and then really following the guy that was in front of me to see, like, what his process and stuff was. And then, you know, my sophomore spring, the long snapper in front of me hurt his back, so that was my real first opportunity to go in and show what I can do.
Sir.
And I was super excited about that. I played the whole spring game. I thought I did really well. And then, you know, come to find out within the spring meetings, you know, we had those exit meetings.
Yep.
To be told, you know, you're not good enough here. You're never going to earn a scholarship. You're never going to play here. I was wrong about you. You know, sitting there and seeing the guy look you in the eye and telling you that, you know, I was devastated because, you know, I'm sitting there. I got the whole world in front of me. Like, this is about to be my time, you know.
Yeah.
John's not coming back. And then all of that just gone like that. So then I was, you know, at first I was like, you know, like, this is BS. Like, this is my time. You know, I called my mom and dad, and was, you know, like, I was just crying to them because I'm like, this isn't fair.
Yeah.
And then my mom and dad were just saying, you know, you've always been a fighter, so why are you going to run now?
Yeah.
You know, just the competitiveness.
Mom and dad, man.
Yeah, and they were just telling me, you know, why are you going to let one individual control what you do with your life? You know, and who's to say that he is the ultimate decision maker, because you never know what can happen. So that was definitely probably my lowest of lows while I was here, was just hearing that. And then
now your highest of highs.
Now I'm on my highest of highs. It was definitely an uphill battle. You know, I was, because that was the COVID year, because that was the COVID spring.
True.
So the spring practice number one, that was my first practice as a starter.
That's awesome.
So I was like, let's go. Like, I feel good. The media is here. Like, they're gonna see me so well. And then, you know, the first spring practice went really well. And then all of a sudden, like, we get sent home. And then we go to spring break. We go on a career networking trip to Florida with Drew, or to New York with Drew. And then we come home, and then we never come back to Notre Dame. And it's like, okay, so it's my spot to lose. So I can either sit on the couch and drink beer and eat like crap this whole quarantine, or I can get right. And so for me, like, just making that decision to give it my all and say, why is this guy going to come in here and take what's mine?
Yeah.
It's like, that was my biggest thing, was that I'm not going to let anyone come in and take what's mine. And
that's actually tough, because you said decision. I feel like the key word is decision. Whenever facing adversity, whenever facing these mental health challenges, on Sean's podcast, actually, I said, I feel like adversity puts you in a corner, and it forces you to make a decision of whether or not you want this or you give up.
Fight or flight.
Yep, that's exactly what it was. And I feel like going throughout this journey, a lot of it was me, like, just flight, you know, like, just on cruise control, like, flight everything. Like, do you want to hang out? Nah, I'm good. Just avoiding everything, avoiding everyone, until I feel like until, when was this? Like, going into draft prep, I remember just snapping out of the funk. Like, a lot of everyone, all my aunts and uncles are reaching out to me, my cousins, everyone's reaching out to me, and, like, I really just sat down, took a deep breath, and was like, what am I doing, like, right now? You know, like, why am I still in this funk? Like, it's been months since my dad has passed, and I'm still, like, kind of in this mode where, like, I kind of feel, like, sorry for myself, you know? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until, like, my draft prep where I just realized, like, I got to make a tough decision here. Like, do I want this or do I not? And at the end of it all, I mean, it just came down to, I love football, and I want to play this so much, and I'm going to do this in honor of my dad. And so that's the track I'm taking, is now with football, like, everyone's going to tell you, like, yeah, like, of course, your dad's legacy and his spirit lives on with you. Mm-hmm. But, like, taking this track of, acknowledging the mental health issues and acknowledging the family grievings, you know. I feel like this is what I was meant to do, is to impact other people's lives, is share my story, share your story and other stories of, you know, how we can, you know, cope with, you know, mental health issues and how we can be of help to others, even if we're going through our own stuff, you know. Like I said, I was going through what I went through last year, this past season, and this past season, like, you just got awarded a scholarship at the end of the year, right? Mm-hmm. But I can only imagine what you were going through mentally throughout the year before you were awarded the scholarship, you know? Like, this is year two of you starting, and it's like, you know, maybe it can get a little frustrating, but like I said, going back to helping out and reaching out to those who we notice have these, like, who are in a funk or, like, who we know are facing tough situations, it's collectively as a group, you know, even though we have our own issues, it's just understanding that the more we reach out and, you know, be there for one another, the more vulnerable people can get with their, you know, mental health issues and situations, and they'll be more open to share. And just stuff like this, like little chats like this, going through like what I went through, it helps. You know, it helps to talk through it with my roommate, you know, someone who's been there for me, who's, you know, who's always been there for me, you know, since the day I moved in here. And yeah, so I appreciate the conversation. Appreciate you doing this, man.
Yeah, man. You know, aiming for you. You're my guy forever, man.
Yes, sir.
This episode was produced by me, Tara Kelly. It was hosted by Josh Long and Kevin DeClute. Grotto Network is Director Javi Zubizarreta, Senior Editor Josh Noem, Senior Producer Josh Long, Assignment Desk and Event Program Manager Liz Collering, Web Content Analyst Michaela Douglas, Art Director Becky Rogers, Producer Kevin DeClute, Social Media Manager Adrian Giralde, Video Associate Tara Kelly.
Can we, are you recording a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's good. I'm glad you're recording, because I just got gin.
Damn.
It's just like old times, man.
Faster.
I'm terrible. This is all I got. 20, 33, 39, 40.
All right. 60 piece off the bat.